Support for WYPR comes from the Park School of Baltimore's Saturday morning Rise and Shine activity sessions for children 3 to 5 years of age. Nature expedition through the Park School woods is April 20th. parkschool.net/shine.
It was the first time that either of us had been in the company of a blood relative. It was quite a remarkable thing to look in his face and see mine reflected back.
At that moment, when we stopped, someone approached the car. I'm not really sure when I knew, but it was my father.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Laura Wexler.
And I'm Jessica Hinken.
This week on the podcast, Lost and Found, two stories about separations and reunions.
Before we get started, we want to thank our sponsor, the Park School, which is a pre-K through grade 12 non-sectarian school located just outside of Baltimore City.
So this first storyteller, Susan Ellsbury, is a nurse, anesthetist. I can never say that word, but she puts people to sleep.
Not an anesthesiologist?
No, it's nurse anesthetist.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, I got it. I got it.
Yeah, there you go.
People, I got it. and I enjoyed the process with her so immensely. We had these wonderful long phone conversations. And this is one of the great things about doing what Jessica and I do is that we get to know people very intensely and intimately for a very short period of time. And then we sort of move on and they move on too. And it's just really, really gratifying. And this is a story I think we're just going to keep hearing more stories like this as 23andMe and Ancestry and all of these things make it more possible for people to be found and less possible for people to hide. So this is a really wonderful story that is a result of technology and love. Anyway, take a listen.
Christmas morning 2018 was not unlike most Christmas mornings my husband and I had spent together over the years. We made coffee and breakfast and opened some gifts and looked forward to having dinner with friends in the afternoon. That morning, however, I received an email from Ancestry saying that I had a message waiting. I had joined Ancestry a few years before because I was looking for information from my birth family. I had been adopted as an infant. So I logged on to Ancestry and opened the message, and at the top of the page, it said parent-child connection. So I thought, well, here they are, or one or the other or both of my mother or my father. So I started to read the letter, and it was from a man, and I thought, well, this is my birth father. And so I got to the end of the letter, and I realized that it was not from my birth father, but it was from my son, Douglas, whom I had given up for adoption 31 years before. So I was obviously stunned, and just thoughts were reeling. It was probably the most life-affirming moment I have ever had. Not because I received a letter, just because I received a letter from my son on Christmas Day, but Christmas Day is also my birthday. So it was the best birthday gift I could have ever received. I quickly emailed him back within the hour, and a very robust email communication ensued, so much so that we had to take it offline because Ancestry has a character limit. So now you know. the week between Christmas and New Year's, we wrote to each other every day, sometimes several times a day, and we agreed to meet at One World Cafe. And, one thing I wanted to say, back up there, why did we meet at One World? One of the things that we learned about each other in that week was that we lived a mile from each other. And that we had been for the past 3 or 4 years. And so, and we also had some mutual friends and acquaintances in common, which, a small tumor, right? So we met at One World. On New Year's Day, we knew one another instantly. And it was the first time that either of us had been in the company of a blood relative. It was quite a remarkable thing to look in his face and see mine reflected back, hear his sense of humor and turn of phrase, and just see myself, really, for the first time in another person. So we talked for a lot of hours there and sort of caught up, and even though the question didn't officially come up, it sort of organically made its way in different ways. Why did I give Douglas up? Well, so I told him this. In May of 1986, I was graduating from nursing school at Shepherd College in West Virginia. I had a job lined up at Georgetown University Hospital, starting in the fall. I had also been accepted to their nursing program to complete my baccalaureate degree, because Shepherd at the time only offered an associate's degree. And I was pregnant after my first time, so I was a pretty late bloomer. I went home and tried to figure out what I was going to do. Marriage was off the table. Because of where I was spiritually at the time, I was not considering abortion. My family was incredibly chaotic. My mother is mentally ill, and she had been hospitalized on and off the years prior. And my father had remarried a woman who gave new meaning to the word wicked stepmother. Words. And so I felt like adoption was probably his best option, and mine as well. So I moved out of my house, and I started my job, and I had Douglas on February 16th at 11:15 in the morning at Sibley Memorial Hospital via cesarean section. When he was born, the doctors were a little bit concerned about some potential medical issues, so they kept him in the hospital for a little while for some observation and further testing. I was discharged home, and he stayed in the hospital. During that time, the private adoption that I had set up several months prior had fallen through because of these potential medical issues. And so when it was time for Douglas to be discharged, I took him home with me and tried to figure out what my next move was going to be. I contacted another agency, and in about a week and change, I drove him there, and I relinquished my parental rights. It was the hardest thing that I have ever done, and I really don't know if I made the right choice. I don't know, standing here right now, if I made the right choice, and I really don't know if I'll ever know if I made the right choice. I got a letter from his adoptive mother about 18 months later, reporting that he had made all of his developmental milestones plus some. And she sent me some pictures of him playing in the sand at the beach. And I thought, well, maybe I did make the right choice. And maybe he will have the life that I hope that he'll have. So, of course, I thought about him over the years many times, especially on his birthday. And but I never thought that I would ever hear from him again, and my shame and guilt really kept me from feeling like I could ever try to find him. So when I got the letter from him on Christmas Day saying that he actually did want to know me, I was just astonished, and it's just been just a miracle in my life. I have not had any other children, so to be able to be a mother to my son finally has been quite miraculous. We are very close. We email and text and talk on the phone, and he comes for dinner on Sunday, and he is a part of our family. So my story here on the stage is over, but the story that I am making with my husband and my son and our family is just beginning.
And I just love that central irony that she had signed up for Ancestry.com to
meet her
find
own
her
parents.
Own parents,
yeah.
And then she herself was found. Such a beautiful story. And her son, Douglas, was in the crowd. You saw him, right?
I did not.
Oh, you didn't see him. They look exactly so alike. Similar.
Oh.
Yeah, they look really similar.
Oh.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, in pure Baltimore fashion, they lived just, right, you know, blocks away from each other.
It's just, it's a wonderful story. Before we get on to the next story, we want to thank Golden West, which is a vegan-forward restaurant on the avenue in Hamden. They have a menu that features Southwestern classics and a late-night carryout window. And we want to thank Baltimore Magazine. You can find them at baltimoremagazine.com or pick up a copy on newsstands. You can check out their podcast, Local Flavor Live.
So our next storyteller is Lori James Towns. She is, I mean, she's a Renaissance woman. She was amazing to get to know through this process. She's a trainer, a coach, a speaker. She talks nationally and internationally on leadership, implicit bias in the criminal justice system, trauma, and other areas related to her role as a forensic social worker.
Yeah. Take a listen.
She was the apple of our eyes, my mother, a single mom who worked at Bethlehem Steel Shipyard and took care of my brother and I. She was the apple of our eye because we spent all of our time together. My father wasn't there because he couldn't manage to keep himself out of prison. And my brother's father, well, he was never in the picture. We were so close and we had our routines. One of our routines is that every Friday, we would go to my grandmother's house and go grocery shopping. And then my brother and I got to pick where we wanted to eat. And so that was the motivation for the grocery shopping trip. This particular Friday, we thought would be no different. We jumped in the car, we made our way to my grandmother's house, but we stopped two blocks short to get gas. At that moment, when we stopped, someone approached the car. I'm not really sure when I knew, but it was my father. And I remember thinking, isn't he supposed to be in jail? He pulls out a gun, and he starts to shoot. Yes. And so Mr. Vick, my mother's friend who was driving, he got hit. He slumped to the side. My mom, she jumps out the car. She goes under the car, but not before getting hit in the side, in her hip. My father turned around and looked at my brother and I as if he didn't have a care in the world, or nothing to live for, rather. He pulls the trigger. No more bullets. I would later learn that that was grace and mercy. He ran, and as a result, we were put into protective custody. We had two detectives, Starsky and Hutch. My brother and I nicknamed them. They were awesome. My mother one day sent them out to get Easter baskets for us because it was the Easter season. They come back. We were like so excited. My brother and I were like, we're going to get our chocolate bunnies, some jelly beans. They come back with two live rabbits. My brother and I were the two happiest traumatized children in Baltimore City on that day. Eventually, though, my mother would have to go back to work and we would eventually get to go back to school. But the damage had been done. Mom would later suffer from drug addiction, which I learned as a forensic social worker was self-medicating the trauma. Yes, and I went into forensic social work. I decided that the job of choice would be to work with men and women who were accused of murder and try to figure out why they did that and tell the world why they should have any empathy for them, and to work with amazing public defenders across the country. My mother always worried, though, because I, of course, had to go to the jails and the prisons to interview them and into their neighborhoods to meet anybody who would talk to me. And one day I said, Mom, why are you so worried? Like, I love my clients. Most of them love me, and I love what I do. And she said, Baby, I'm not worried about your clients. I'm worried that you might run into your father one day in prison. But I never did. But in my 20s, I get a phone call. I answer the phone. It was kind of late at night. And he said, Hey, Lori, it's your father. Imagine. Yes. And so I said, what? And he said, yeah, do you want to know where your mother is? I'm like, is this a bad movie or a late night infomercial commercial? Like, I'm not really sure. Because on this day, I actually didn't know where my mother was. Her addiction had made it a habit of her disappearing from time to time. So after a few choice words on my part, he eventually told me where she was, and I went there. She was at my sister's house, a child that he had had from another relationship. I put my mom in the car, and I had all kinds of questions for her, ending with, like, did you forgive him? Like, what are you doing here? There were no answers but tears in her eyes, so I returned for the answers. I was shocked at what he said when I confronted him. He said, you know, baby, I had got this guy to do it, but when he came to the house and he saw you and your mother sleeping in the, you and your brother sleeping with your mother, he said, man, you didn't tell me that woman had children, and he left, and so I did it. And I said, is that your idea of an answer? And I remember running out of the house screaming backwards, like, I will never forgive you. I realized on that day, however, that him and my mother had one thing in common that brought her there, and that was their addiction. My mother would eventually get sober, and our closeness became as it used to be. We were inseparable again. My daughter and I would go over there almost every day. I would take her over there almost every day, and we hung out. In 2003, at the age of 56, though, she died of cancer. And I remember blaming my father for her premature death, for the internal and external pain that he had caused her. And so years later, I didn't think about it, years later, I'm sitting at my desk at the public defender's office and the phone rings. A social worker says, you know, your dad is at this nursing home. Can you come? Because he's not doing well and he's been asking for you. I was like, no, I don't think so. I didn't make any promises, but I hung up the phone. And I sat at my desk and then I remembered that one of my clients prior to being executed said, Lori, I need you to forgive your father. If you can work with people like me for forgiveness and get other people to forgive me, then do it for yourself, if not for him. I know I promised him on that day that I would do it, but I had no intentions of doing it. So I got up from behind my desk and I went. I walked in the nursing home and was immediately hit by the smell of death, dying, and destruction and sadness. But when I walked into my father's room, he was all smiles. He's like, hey, girl, I didn't think you would come. And I said to myself, yeah, me neither. And so I stood there and I listened to the nurses as they told me what was going on with him. And I stood by his side. I would stand by his side as they needed to amputate his leg. I stood by his side and advocated for a better medical facility. It was at that medical facility that we spent time together. Every once in a while, I would let my daughter come see him. He would tell me about stories that he used to see me on the news or in the newspaper, and that when I was in college, he collected all of my box scores, and he teased me because I didn't get a lot of playing time, and I was like, yeah, that's true, but whatever, and we would laugh about that. We would talk for hours about the Ravens and the Orioles because we both love sports, and on one particular day, after the nurses came who were from heaven to clean his wounds, he said to me, how could you do this for me, baby? How could you be here for me? And I remember, like, at that moment, I had to be the parent, and he was the child. And I remember, like, mumbling something about, I need to. And I remember saying, grace and mercy. And a couple of days later, I would be there with him when he took his last breath, holding his hand in forgiveness, providing grace and mercy. Thank you.
Yeah, that's the ultimate forgiveness, grace story.
Yeah. Yeah. And the, you know, doing something for your parent that your parent should be able to do for you but can't.
Yeah.
And the switch in those roles and just the profound quality of that.
It was beautiful. Her daughter was in the front row with a big bouquet of flowers for her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before we get out of here, we want to thank Baltimore Center Stage, tickets at centerstage.com. And we want to thank The Wine Source, located at 3601 Elm Avenue in Hamden. They're wonderful people. Visit them on the regular.
If you can leave us a review at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts, that would be swell. And we want to thank Maureen Harvey for taking such good care of us as our producer.
We'll see you next week.